Good morning, everyone. It is May 11th, 2022. The purpose of this meeting is a technical review committee, which has an agenda to start at 9 a.m. I will call this meeting to order as the chair. I'll note Paul Jordan, Jamie Gorman, Rich Bourbonnais, John Schott, Dave Flanders, Chris Henner, and Jamie Rabbit are in attendance. Staff Jay Parker is also here. So the next agenda item is B, approval of minutes, March 9th, 2022, and April 13th, 2022. I would entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
Thank you, John.
Second.
David. Any discussion on the motion to approve the two meeting minutes? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposition, abstentions, motion carries. Agenda item C is PRC minor review. Item number one, advisory development plan review, Fox Real Estate Holdings. Proposed change of use from a bed and breakfast to 8-bedroom residence, requiring a special use permit from the Zoning Board of Review for three unrelated tenants. AP 24-4, Lot 15, located at 1747 Mooresfield Road. James L. Fox is the applicant slash owner. Fox. Please proceed, Mr. Fox.
Okay. Just a matter of clarification. I had not intended to try and change from a bed and breakfast. I was informed kind of early along in this process that any bed and breakfast variances and so on and so forth had expired. The house has been unoccupied for almost 5 years now. So basically, I'm looking to operate it as you know, a single family residence with the ability to rent it to more, allowing me to rent it to people associated with the university. I like the special use permit to rent it to more than three unrelated people.
So just for clarity, you're intending to basically have a student housing or
not
or
necessarily
renting
but I want
bedrooms.
I want that.
You know, there's a B&B.
Yeah.
And then there's something that isn't a B&B.
Yeah. The house, I think most of you know the house. It needed a ton of repair. We put a lot of money into it. I'm interested in bringing these bigger houses back that have historical significance. We did the Silver Lake Cottage project over here on Woodruff Avenue with Paul Sherman. And I'd like to see the house be at its best use now. Its proximity to the university, with walking distance and its isolation. You know, the two neighbors are in 80-acre hayfield, and or the abutters are in 80-acre hayfield and land trust land. So it's well isolated, and it's a huge house. It has 8 bedrooms, 8 bathrooms. So we've upgraded the septic to be an 8-bedroom, 8-bath house. Done a heating system, cooling system, roof, siding, windows, the entire house. And I do have a group of 8 people from the university who are interested in renting it for 2 years. It's an extremely well-vetted group. And I'm using the Eldred Farm model. Over there we have 32 rooms and 6 different houses. It's operated for 8 years. I may be wrong, but it may be the only other place in town who applied for this permit and has granted it. And I'm just trying to do things by the rules.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Frost. Again, just for clarity, your statement was that you really kind of wanted to live there and run a B&B, and then coming full circle, it wouldn't be owner-occupied, because a B&B is owner-occupied. If it's an inn, it's owner-occupied. If you are using it as a single-family home and then allowing people to stay there, it's owner-occupied. So there would be no owner on the property. It would be purely a rental.
Well, there is...
You own the property. Will you be living there?
Yes.
Will you be living there?
No.
So it's not owner-occupied?
No.
It's a rental property, 100%.
Right.
That's your intent?
Yes. I mean, The setup of the house allows for a representative of the family, somewhat separated from the rest. And that's a possibility.
May I ask a question?
Yeah, I'll open it up to Paul.
I'm just curious, what is the at Eldred Farm? Is that owner-occupied or are those all?
No. No, it's owned by Paul Sherman, and it's 7 individual houses, all each rented out to, from 5 bedrooms to 3, 2.
Yeah, for the record, Jay Parker. That was a subdivision. Eldred Farm was a subdivision. He just happens to be renting out the structures.
The structures, not individual.
Correct.
He's rented it out for 8 years. With no issues with the town, police, anything else.
Jamie, Farm?
Yeah, so I just wanted to clear. So it used to be a lodging house, but it's with one kitchen, and then the tenants would have individual room, but they're renting the whole house.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it always had more than one kitchen.
Yeah.
So it has 3 kitchens.
Okay, but there's going to be one kitchen or multiple kitchens?
Haven't added any new kitchens, yep. But I'm completely gutting and redoing 2 of the kitchens.
So there's going to be no change of use? I mean, saying it was a lodging house before, bed and breakfast, but really that's
owner-occupied,
or an authorized agent. So I mean, you have somebody living there?
That's the intention, yeah.
Caretaker?
Yeah.
How about a fire alarm system? Is there?
So there's currently a fire alarm system that's wired into the town fire department, and we've been upgrading that. So it's been off for the last 4 months because we're adding. We're going to have to change all the monitor heads out to bring them up to code, and I intend to have that system fully functional, obviously, before.
Okay, so no change in bedroom count. The difference being that it's no longer owner-occupied, it's a family representative or somebody?
Yeah, a designee.
Okay.
We're all, the whole family that owns it is in town, and it's not a slumlord situation, it's a carefully monitored investment property.
All right, and then dumpster or trash? You see trash, is that going to be a dumpster or bins?
I currently live in a 7-unit condominium, and we do the town trash bin. So that's an enclosed area. It's big enough for a dumpster, but I think we probably intend to have individual bins there.
All right.
One quick follow-up on Mr. Gorman's comments. Building sprinkler?
Sorry?
Is the building planned to be sprinkled?
Because of the historical nature and the construction of the house, it'd be really difficult to sprinkle it. And I don't believe by code it should be, it needs to be sprinkled with the fire alarm system. And if there are some questions, but like I say, we've had the fire marshal out to look at it. The previous owners got some special historical exemptions variants to occupy the third floor. Third floor has one stairwell. And if the fire marshal or the building inspector feel that that's not adequate for fire safety, I'm willing to give up the use of the third floor. The second floor has two stairwells on either end of the building with egress and shouldn't, by code, require sprinkling.
But you don't have any correspondence from the fire marshal saying whether you do or don't need sprinklers?
I don't, because I didn't find anything on the 5-page checklist for the TRC that mentioned the interior of the house at all.
So just to clarify, the checklist requires fire department review.
The special use permit requires that in 504.4.
Okay. Either way, are you in receipt of the email that I forwarded to you?
I did.
You and your team yesterday
reached out to the fire marshal. I plan to have Jamie and the fire marshal come over and look at the situation and advise me on whether or not I can use that third floor area or whether I need to close it off and not use it.
Yeah, Chief Reed couldn't attend today, so I just wanted to make sure that you were in receipt of his correspondence.
And I've already been to his office and emailed him. He's been to the house a couple of times during the process of the renovations, so.
Thank you. Rich?
I've got a whole lot to add. So you've got a lot of space here for any drainage or improvements or anything like that. That's all I'm concerned with. Mark, what's the surface on the parking lot going to be?
It's going to be asphalt, I guess. Good. Or crushed asphalt.
Okay. And then has that been fully sized yet? Do you think that's about it right there for Sean and Rich?
Yes. I'm required to have, I'm looking to put 8 people in there, kind of, and I've got 11 parking.
So at some point, we'll get to see a narrative then?
Excuse me?
A narrative? I'm bringing a narrative.
Yes.
Yeah.
What are you sizing the basin for?
We actually didn't even take credit for the existing gravel, compacted gravel surface that's out there.
Okay.
Being utilized for parking. We just did an analysis on the infiltration area that you see, which would mitigate the roof area and the entire...
Any increases?
Just the total parking area. So in other words, it deducted the gravel. We just sized it that way. Obviously, the pre and postal work because of that, and we'll give you a narrative indicating that. But it's sized for the entire area as if it were impervious surface for the parking. And drop it.
Good, and you got a lot of area there, so I'm not concerned that you can't get it to work. And you got a size 400 year by any chance?
Yes.
So it looks like it's only drawn to be maybe a foot deep or so?
Correct.
Is it possible to plant it? And make it a bio?
With a...
Bio-based? I'm just saying being close to the road and everything, you're going to get a look at it. Although a foot deep deep, I got like a foot deep, it's not really too noticeable, especially when it's mowed grass.
Right.
But it would be an opportunity to plant it. Normally, I don't even suggest that because I usually like to see more volume. But in this case, before, because you're only going with a foot, you know, it may be an opportunity to do it anyways.
Yeah, we could look at that. There is a pretty heavy vegetation screen.
It's not a requirement. I'm just suggesting that maybe you want to, but whatever you come up with is fine. That's all I got.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'll start right
here. Yeah.
David?
I would just request that for the planting, we use the town specifications. I don't want to see the mulch up against the tree. It's a little inspecific about the planting depth. I just for uniformity, I'd like to move everybody over to using the town specs.
John?
So the fire communications division, they're transitioning to a radio fire panel. Is that what you're installing?
Yeah.
Okay, so you get away from the hard wire.
I guess that requirement is in the next year or so.
Correct. So I just wanted to be aware of that.
Yeah, I am aware of that. And there's a lot, you know, well, it's only the thing that stopped us before is the equipment wasn't available. It's still hard to get. But
I'm sorry?
It's still a little hard to get. But
so I guess the only big concern I have is walkability to the university. If you're seeking either staff or students for housing there, I mean, 138 is not the easiest road to walk down the shoulder of.
It's 100 yards to the sidewalk.
It's 100 yards what?
To the sidewalk. And you have to walk 100 yards on 138 to reach the sidewalk.
It's about 1,000, yeah. So, I mean, that's a little disconcerting to me. I don't know how the other members feel. If there's, you know, if there should be some improvements on the shoulder, either a conventional sidewalk or a walking path, but that would require state approval, DOT approval.
They call it dead man's water.
I mean, the people are still moving along there. They're just starting to transition, I think, to the 25-mile-an-hour zone, but they're moving along in front of that property. So that would be my only concern. If most of your attendants are, again, either staff or students, and if the students, not all of them have cars, I don't know if, how many people are going to be walking to the campus or not, but that would be my concern.
Yeah, with the current group that we're considering renting it to for the next 2 years, that they've got a carpool system set up with them. That, you know, generally speaking, that walk is problematic as it might be, or a bike ride. We'll have bike racks there and bike indoor and outdoor bike storage. It's almost preferable to drive. You can drive from the house to the school and park in a parking lot that's farther away from the university than the house is.
I think I have to agree with John. I would definitely like to see some sort of a walkway. I mean, not necessarily a paved sidewalk, but if there's something you can do with DOT that's possible, because it does make the connection between the house and the university.
And the traffic does move very quickly.
The traffic does move.
There's a pretty wide shoulder there. I mean, I walk it all the time. Or I blink it all the time.
Again, to J.B. Rabbit. I'm the chair of the TRC. I'm also the planning director. I would share the concerns with John and Paul. You're proposing, instead of having a bed and breakfast, where you don't have that transient population who needs to get to the university, to basically a university dorm type scenario where you may be introducing that pedestrian movement. Unfortunately, permits aren't issued to individuals or to tenants of the day. They're issued to property. So you're saying that with regards to the current 8 people who may be there will drive or carpool, may not be the 8 people there 6 months from now or 10 years from now. So again, the town, as well as the representatives sitting here, have to look at the property and not the individuals that you may be entertaining living there at the moment. I see a number of concerns from my perspective that have been discussed today. I would really like clarity on the living arrangements. I want to say in your testimony tonight, I see this morning, a little bit of confusion that I still see. Originally, you were saying you were going to live there and still try and rent the rooms as a B&B. Then you're saying...
When did I say that? That was a misconception. He never said that.
Well, he said it when he started.
Oh, okay. That was a miscommunication.
I bought it. I'm going to be there, and then I'm going to rent the extra bedrooms.
You may have said
that's
that.
What was said. So that's where my confusion
sorry,
is.
Sorry, in my attempt to clarify that, I wasn't trying to change it from a bed and breakfast. I just bought the house, and I want to be able to rent it out within the law.
So just for clarity, that it is a property that was purchased from a commercial, in essence, venture to convert a residential unit that was a B&B into a boarding room for individuals, whether they're employed by the university, attending the university. It is a rental unit of 8 bedrooms with, I'm not sure, with the confusion I had in Jamie Kornbora, what are the kitchen arrangements or facilities? I think the DRC should have a write-up. The regulations require you to not change the residential nature of the property.
And I think, have you read the mission statement? I haven't.
You're putting an 11-space parking lot between the road and the house.
Which is?
There are some alternative layouts that could potentially soften the appearance of those proposed. Sorry, it's not 11, it's 5 through 11. Those two parallel spaces could be brought to the interior of the property, and you would free up another 10 plus feet there. I'm not clear how you get into those parallel parking spaces with the turning movements without doing a 3-point turn within the parking area or a backing movement within the drive aisle. So again, simply eliminating space 10 and 11 and bringing those internal to the property would be one suggestion I would have that would get the cars off of and away from the street. You could alternatively push the drive aisle internal to the property and the cars to the exterior. I think there are some parking configurations where you could make this look more residential and less commercial.
I will say that we're actually reducing the parking footprint from the bed and breakfast. That's all been parking for the last 30 years.
Did the bed and breakfast have 100% occupancy 365 days out of the year?
I have no idea.
Okay. I would find that highly unlikely. If you're doing this as a commercial venture, there in all likelihood will be cars in that parking lot every day.
I agree with that, but I think we...
James, the regs say you are not supposed to change the residential character of the neighborhood. That's a parking lot in the front yard of a house. You're not converting it from a B&B.
You can't see it from the street. That buffer.
Actually, I drove by there multiple times. I can see that parking lot from the street.
Jamie, Josh Rosen.
Yeah.
So the parking occurs in the front of the building now. It's been utilized that way. Regardless of how transient the use was, we've shown 11 spaces, 8 of which are required within the special use permit because you need one space allocated for bedroom. So to me, it's apples to apples almost in that sense. If you want to reduce the 3 spaces, if Mr. Fox wanted, we could get rid of 9, 10, and 11 just completely. We're just adding some extra potential for guests or whatever.
Mr. Rosen, to your point, if you only had 8 parking spaces, I think the board would say, where do the guests park? So I applaud you for the 11. You are not proposing to keep the use as a B&B. The regulations state for the letting of rooms in this type of scenario, the single family residential house that exists cannot change the character of that single family residential house. So the commercialization of what is viewed as a single family residential house in that zone has to gain the appearance of the single-family house. From my perspective as a planner, adding those parking spaces, those seven parking spaces in front of the house, it's not a B&B anymore, so you can't say I have an existing grandfathered thing there. It's viewed as a single-family home that also functioned as a B&B, converting it to a fully commercial venture. Under that commercial venture within the regs, the exterior and the use of the property is supposed to match the residential zoned land. I would find it hard-pressed to see many single-family homes that have seven parking spaces with a 24-foot wide drive aisle between the street and the house. It's not how single-family homes work. I think there's alternative layouts to soften that parking lot to look less commercial and more residential. I'm just one person making that statement, but I'm also reading the regulations. The third floor, I think, is an issue, and it needs to be resolved with the fire marshal, because I again, Mr. Fox, you stated you would more than be willing to abandon that use, but if he says you can have that use, I'm sure it's going to require an exterior staircase. That exterior staircase would have to be done internal to the building, because if you added it external to the building, that would change the residential character of the neighborhood. And you're not, the regs say you're supposed to keep that residential appearance. So I'd like clarity on that. Again, the walkability on the pedestrian movements, I think, should be resolved. And that's kind of what I have right now. But I think there is some outside input that needs to be vetted, specifically from the fire marshal, before at least I, as an individual on this committee, can make a recommendation that there are no outstanding issues.
Can you wrap the infiltration basin around the property line and move 10 and 11 next to 9 and then make that green space where 10 and 11
That's not the property line.
That's a silt fence, John. So they have another 2-3 acres to move that basin. Okay. There, Josh, there are tennis courts to the northeast, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone has anything to add or follow up, and Mr. Fox, you're more than welcome to react to the items I think are still outstanding.
Which is, well, honestly, I feel like we've done an excellent job in the parking with what we've got there. You know, serves the use. I think it's a little bit of overkill, but that's, you know, it's better to have too much parking than not enough parking. Since the grounds are of historical significance as well, I hate to put parking back around behind the house, but, I honestly, with the screening there, that's very dense screening, as you can see from the photograph. And in the summertime, it's and in the wintertime, it's pretty impenetrable to look in there. I just don't think you're going to look in there and see a lot of cars. We're always striving for perfection, but I think that issue. And it, as far as pedestrian pathway, it'd be great if every rental house for you or I had a nice path to get to the university, but it's a big ask to, I don't know who'd be responsible for a walkway. Of course, I'd love to see the sidewalk extended, but, a little bit further down the road. But I think there's at least 15 feet on the side of the road there that you can walk on.
Mr. Fox, this property is not in the historic district, but is it a, you mentioned historic a number of times, is it a historic?
It's on the National Register of Historic Houses. And one thing we've, you know, totally done, I know I put a few photos in the package, is that we haven't changed a single exterior. Wall or appearance or anything. We've just upgraded, you know, the siding, the windows, the trim, everything else. And interiorly, we haven't moved a single historic wall. It's the reason we have so much interest in it for people that want to rent it is because it has way, you know, as far as common rooms, living rooms, other rooms in the house. It's way more than it's kind of other rental property would be.
Did you consult with the Historic District Commission at all?
Well, not in the Historic District, so I haven't.
I know, I understand that, but since it's a historically registered property and the improvements that you were making, if you wanted to be sure you were being consistent with that, I just was curious if you had, because they can't, people can't go and voluntarily seek their advice.
Right, I have contacted them, and I have the full file on the house, the history of the house, and that sort of thing. Pictures going way back.
So you have contacted it? You did seek their advice, or not yet?
As far as...
Just for clarity, I'll separate it into two things. There's South Kingstown's Historic District.
Right.
That's actually staffed by our department.
Right.
So you would have contacted Brian Wagner or Rich Youngkin as the chair of that committee. So you haven't contacted our local historic commission or staff that represents that commission?
No.
Okay. But have you reached out to the National Historic Register staff?
I have a name for the local historian on the property that Maria Mack gave me, and and I have reached out to him.
But they have no affiliation to our town historic district or the National Register of Historic Places. You're not sure?
I know they do research. I'm sorry, I can't recall the gentleman's name at the moment.
No problem.
And the last question is, have you reached out to your neighbors about this? Have you reached out to the neighbors? Are they aware of your intention or what you want to do there?
Yes. In the beginning, I told Maria what we intended to do. And we intended to do a nice and thorough job on the property. Like I said, my other neighbors, William Rose, I've reached out to him and spoke with him many times. He owns an 80-acre field.
Right.
I don't have any. There are no neighbors.
I ask you that because obviously the special use permit require a public hearing and they'll get notified. So it's always good to talk to them first before they get the letter.
There are two abutters across the street. One house is rented, I believe, to university students. And then there's that property. And then there's the land trust, which I'm active with anyway. So
good.
I reached out to that as well.
I would just say, as a member of the planning board, I'm very much in favor of the use. I think it's an interesting way to look at providing some relatively affordable housing for people that don't need a lot of housing. I like the idea of the shared spaces. I do share those concerns about the walkway and the parking. I haven't driven by recently. I'm not sure if the screening there is sufficient. Jamie, I don't know if there's a way to require some sort of a maintenance plan or replacement if something's damaged, but...
Paul, to your point, I mean, there are some larger abrevieties out in front. There's some invasives mixing in with those abrevieties. There's also some mature deciduous, but it's mostly your views headed east. You're looking in the driveway and the cut through, and you will see that parking lot.
Which I think we would definitely not want.
Yeah, so again, I would say our department's worked quite well with Mr. Rosen on looking at potential options or slight alterations to the parking lot to soften that appearance. I'm sure there's some middle ground there to deal with.
Jay read my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Jay, can you look at it coming?
That's where the...
Yeah, it would not be, you know, snow on the ground and pile up wouldn't work at all.
Regarding the walkway, just James Callahan for Sir Fox, that, I think it's a good idea, obviously, but I think it's, Mr. Shock, I know better than me, but it seems to be well out of his control for the entire length of the street of Mooresfield. He could do a little walkway on his own property, which he has control over, but the rest of it, I don't think he has any.
We hit that curb from the station.
For the whole entire, but that's not really his.
But you're saying if he's coming up with a use that's going to necessitate, you know, pedestrian facilities, that's the applicant's responsibility.
But I think it's also, I mean, DOT could approve it. It may not, but
if they deny it, that's a whole different story. But
I will point out that any prospective tenants, I know it goes with the property and not the tenants, but all the prospective tenants that we've talked to have said that they plan on carpooling to a specific lot. They don't necessarily plan on walking. We don't have to let them walk, but, well, just wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
So, again, everyone's role is to look at the property and the change of the use of the property, devoid of ownership, devoid of future tenants. It's just the use.
Nobody's telling me, though, that they don't have a car and they plan on walking, put it that way. They all have cars.
Even if they have a car, it doesn't mean they wouldn't walk.
Yeah.
The landlord testified that if they drive, they may actually drive to the university and have a further walk. So the potential for them to walk, which would be shorter than a satellite parking lot in the northwest corner of the university,
is probably unsafe.
Who owns the hayfield next door? Is that
William Rose?
I guess I'm just wondering if there's some opportunity for a footpath through that property.
As the role of the TRC, TRC makes a recommendation. I'm not sure if anyone is prepared to make a motion for a recommendation to move this forward without getting some additional information from the applicant, trying to button up some of the what may appear to be outstanding items. With regards to DOT or sidewalk, if you reached out to DOT and DOT said we will absolutely not install a sidewalk along 138 for your use, you know, as a board or even as the public service director may like the sidewalk, but DOT, you know, gave it a thumbs down, that I would guess that's potentially moot. But I think from some further clarification from the fire marshal, some further clarification on the pedestrian movements, some a relook of the parking, potential modifications to the drainage, clarification of the utilization of the third floor, whether it's being used, not being used, if it's being used. I mean, from my perspective, I agree with you. If you have a legal right to use the third floor and can give someone a study space and a bedroom, or that, I am 100% on board with that. It's just what are the ramifications of using that? Does it require another means of egress? What is that other means of egress? Is it an exterior stair, or are you doing an addition which would house that stair? through me, there are a number of questions. I don't know if any other member of the TRC committee would be willing to make a motion either to table or if you don't agree that there are some outstanding issues. I would also entertain a motion to move this project forward with a list of concerns.
I mean, I don't want to speak for the planning board, but I mean, I think there's a number of items that are unanswered that they may struggle with unless you get them resolved here first, that's all. Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you. Jamie, the plans show, and the testimony here was that there's two kitchens in this mm-hmm. building. That, with two kitchens, that would be representative of two units, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, if it's not separated, you're saying that haven't changed anything, so.
I haven't changed anything that wasn't there, just updated it.
I mean, typically, what defines the kitchen is a means for cooking, so if there's cabinetry and counters there, those could remain, but the stoves, that's typically the trigger. But again, it's something that lodging house before continued use being similar to a lodging house, although not owner occupied.
So, Jamie, there's a on the plan right here, there's a kitchen dining area to a door that goes to a pantry breakfast room to another kitchen.
Right.
And that's the first floor?
That's the first floor.
Jay, what's the significance of two kitchens?
That's my question. If you're having a board, if it's a boarding house and you're renting rooms, that implies one unit,
correct,
not two. The presence of a second kitchen, I would argue, represents two units. If there's a means of sealing off, there is a bedroom, and there is a bedroom and a bathroom next to that kitchen. So looking at this, I would say this is a two-unit. What kind of implications does that have to the boarding house request? I presume they would have to lose one of the kitchens, possibly?
I mean, the means for cooking, it meets the definition of, single family dwelling, you have one kitchen, that's totally permanent. It's nothing to prohibit other cabinets or counters, but if it looks like a separate unit in entirety, it has to flow and function as, one, everybody not separate.
Yeah. Jay, I think, Mr. Fox is here, he said it's been previously rented, what appears to be a former potential garage that's been converted at some point. Where you're showing the kitchen, living, mm-hmm. And almost a separate unit. Was that rented as a separate unit?
No, it's never been a separate unit. In fact, it doesn't even have a door.
But for clarification, a bed and breakfast requires owner occupancy, which typically would be in their own unit.
I don't doubt that the operator of the bed and breakfast used that for.
I mean, I could be wrong. Am I mistaken on that?
I mean, there's nothing limiting a bed and breakfast from having,
one kitchen?
Yeah, or two. There's nothing saying that you can't have two kitchens. Typically, it's prepared in one and then served to the guests. In this case, I mean, it sounds like there were three.
There were three. I mean, that pantry kitchen there has the sink and it has all the old, 20th century, has flour bins and.
Yeah, but again, I think it's a technicality that needs to be addressed one way or the other, because if somebody were to present a duplex and say, I'm going to do a boarding house or in the realm of a bed and breakfast, there's different definitions for each one of those, and I think we need to be sure that we're not kind of muddy in the water here and overlooking something that we should be considering. It's a technicality, but.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be requiring, I don't think, to remove all the cabinetry and historical elements, but for the means of cooking, remaining single facility for all residents to use would be ideal to fit into that definition.
Right.
But it's a big enough space. It's a big enough house, a big enough,
the reason why we renovated what was existing was because, you know, it's hard to crowd 8 people into the one kitchen, and obviously didn't work at some point in its history, and the 2 or the 3 were required to give enough room for everybody to operate easily and get their breakfast cooked. So,
for practical purposes, as long as the kitchen and kitchen's 2 stoves are accessible by all 8 rooms, I mean, that's the key, right? Because the duplex has a division, I assume.
Right.
This is all, and I think we've all had roommates at some point. Working with one kitchen and 8 people must be brutal. It's 3 people, it's brutal.
Right. And again, I'm focusing on the fact that it's a technicality. The reason why I say it is that if it could be considered a 2-unit or a duplex, it's an R40 zone that's not allowed.
Right, that makes sense. I think it should be.
So when we're talking about a previous bed and breakfast use changing over to the current use, and then considering, well, what really is it? We need to make sure that it, you know, it's a square peg in a square hole, and we make sure we consider it the same.
I anticipated that. That's why the layout is such that everyone has access
to what?
Every kitchen.
Just for clarity, what Jay's pointing out is this unit, which potentially looks like it was a garage at some point in time, converted into that space, that can't be rented independent of the house.
Right.
So that door potentially creates an issue.
Why can't you just put a condition on the approval that just states that the intent is to not divide the spaces into separately.
That works for this owner, but I mean, if he happens to sell it and then somebody decides later, you know, we like that. We like the belt and suspenders approach so that it's clear that it doesn't happen in the future.
Your applicant's submission should clarify that point, and then any approval will carry forward. So again, I'm more than willing to work with your, Mr. Callahan is more than capable of coming up with something that may address that issue of this house functioning as 2 units, because in essence, as a B&B, it potentially operated as 2 units, one with the homeowner and one managing the residential estate home proper and moving back and forth through that one door.
This was approved as a B&B, as a B&B, it would not be approved now in some way, the past designation?
The B&B is just, it's got a different flavor to it, because it's many times owner-occupied, all in one unit. It's not being occupied 24/7, 365. It's just a different type of use. When you go to a full rental with 8 people, all separate, unrelated, no owner occupancy, maybe there's going to be somebody, a designee, who's going to take over, maybe not, I don't know, but they're different. That's why it's hard for us to say, well, it should be fine based on the prior B&B use, because they're not the same.
Mr. Shock appeared to not be comfortable moving it forward with a favorable recommendation or recommendation.
If you move it forward, I think, this is just me, I don't speak for the planning board, I think they're going to struggle with a lot of these open items until they're resolved.
I agree.
I think, me personally, you're better off coming back next month to this group with all these questions that have arisen vetted. And then they can make a fair and favorable recommendation to the planning board. That's just my suggestion.
I agree.
There is a bit of time in this. The house has been unoccupied for 5 years. A lot of money has been spent on it. A month lost here is another academic year lost, for me. These people need some kind of confidence that they can that on the place as a place to stay.
Your border property, your residential zone, that was a former B&B, and you're proposing to change the use. There's a permitting process associated with that.
If it's just my house, can I rent it out to whomever I want?
No, not more than three unrelated people.
Without a special use permit.
Without a special use.
Yes, you can. But if you rent it out to more than three unrelated people, you need a special use permit, same situation as that.
Right, but if I just rent it out to...
You can rent it.
Yeah. And if more than three unrelated people occupy it, the building department will be there with a notice of violation, and you'll be violating the zoning code.
Right.
So you stated you want to follow the rules.
I do want to follow the rules.
I think what Mr. Shaka stated and Paul Jordan, is that a delay here does not necessarily mean a delay in the overall permitting time frame. Moving it forward here causes a delay at the next step.
Brad, I was just going to say, if it moves to the planning board, it will just get delayed again.
It's going to get delayed again. It
won't be resolved.
It's going to get delayed again at the planning
board. And this is a month delay right now?
This is a month delay.
So there's no other technical review committee, special meetings or anything like that?
When's the next planning board meeting that this would be?
Presuming... You don't return to TRC, or presume?
I'm just saying, if these issues can be vetted between now and the next planning board meeting, then it will be a discussion at the planning board with amendments.
I'll entertain a motion to table this application to next month's meeting.
Then a second month of planning.
I'll entertain a motion to table this to next month's TRC meeting.
So moved.
Can I amend that, what I just asked?
I have a motion on the table. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, John. I have a motion to table this application to the next TRC. I have a second by Mr. Schock. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. We're more than willing to work with your staff and our department during the next few weeks to address any outstanding items.
So can I get a list of your issues?
We will be preparing meeting minutes, and those will be available for you. Mr. Fox, we've worked very well with Mr. Rosen and Mr. Callahan as a council, and I'm relatively confident that items can be addressed in a timely manner.
Jamie, just as a historical note, when the Viles is owned just as a B&B, this was in fact their residence.
Okay.
The dealer's residence.
Thank you, Dave.
The former garage area was their residence.
Yeah.
That's why there's a kitchen there.
We know Mr. Fox, we know Mr. Rosen.
This is my son, Martin Fox.
Martin, nice to meet you. Thank you. And again, we're also available in our department to meet with you and your dad. Thank you. So our next agenda item is item D, TRC advisory review. Item number one, major subdivision, no street creation, combined conceptual master plan, preliminary plan, terminal subdivision, proposed two lot minor subdivision, with a waiver to utilize the flexible frontage provision of the zoning ordinance, considered a major subdivision, AP 74, lot 7, located at 350 Ministerial Road, Luigi, and all trust.
Good morning, folks. Al DiOrio. I'm assisting Kim in the trust with her application for a two-lot subdivision. With me today is Anthony Nenner, who's done the project engineering, and we're here to address any questions or concerns that you may have.
Hi,
Al, you want to just give a brief history? I mean, you guys applied last, it was a year ago.
We were before the planning board for pre-application September 22nd of last year. My recollection of that meeting is that the greatest issue of concern was the driveway. We've spent the past year completing the checklist. Anthony has invested significant time in fleshing out the details of that proposed drive. And I believe that that's really the only issue that caused anybody any concern during our last presentation. Certainly, if I'm mistaken, we can address those things as well, but I'm kind of thinking of covering all the bases. Recently been issued a certificate of completeness. Again, I think all the boxes have been checked.
So I'm going to move to our two resident experts on driveways and drainage, to Rich and then to John. Go ahead, Mr. Bergman.
I looked at the narrative and it seems to, it meets all my suggestions. I don't know who I talked to. So I appreciate that. I think it does everything. I was concerned with this project because first of all, it doesn't necessarily trigger a PAP from DOT because you've got an existing access and you're maintaining an existing access. And you're not widening it or anything like that, and you're not changing the use. But if you were to start discharging more volume water or peak flow to the state property, that would trigger the PAP. And they would have never allowed it. So in this case, what they've done is they've prepared a narrative and a grading plan that provides enough volume storage and peak flow that I think satisfies the site, and then even goes beyond what our general requirements are. So, I mean, I've looked through this narrative. You got a typo on your table, table four. It says existing conditions. I believe that's proposed conditions, but it's a minor thing. And I'm okay with this at this point. So I don't know what more to say. I think this driveway is exceptionally steep. You know, I think that's going to be a problem for any future residents on this. But it's not like it's prohibited to be that steep, and I'm not sure what to say about it. But, you know, I just think that it's going to be a tough driveway in and out. But I've got nothing further to say. Additionally, I asked for check dams along the swales so that we don't have erosion. I want to be really careful about those things, and those have been provided, so I've got nothing further to add.
Thank you, Rich. John?
Yeah, tough site. I think the other thing I had was soil erosion during construction. It's certainly going to take a little more effort than a typical site. So, other than that, I'm okay.
And I'm going to move to Chris, just on the fire side.
I don't know how we get a fire truck down there, but it's pretty steep to get a fire truck. Probably the only small down there, but not big.
Does it fly in the face of any fire code or anything like that?
Was that?
Does it comply with fire code? Is there some code that would not allow the driveway to be presented as it is?
There is. What is it?
Or because of the steepness, Chris, require residential sprinkler system, design system.
Yes.
Chris, is that a yes on the residential sprinkler system?
That could be a condition of it.
Is it just under 11%?
You know, 11% is based on, you know, my experience is the criteria where you, you know, anything over 10 you pave. The potential only suggestion I would have is I would run that pavement out in an easterly direction and less at the bottom of that slope.
I do show it paved. It's shaded when it's paved.
Right, but I would run that out almost to so like 108, 109.
Okay.
Because again, you're transitioning between 130 and 115, and you don't even carry that pavement to that 15-foot transition. I would just run it easterly to where it flattens out and any velocity on that. Understanding that it's crowned, but most residential pavers, when they pave that, are probably not going to crown it. So, and again, that's one of the things that if it's required to be crowned, if the certificate, if someone does an inspection and it's not crowned, whoever's buying it, you know, you put the town in a very awkward position to say, dig that $8,000 driveway you just paved up and now crown it properly. In all likelihood, they wouldn't rip it up. They shim it with another inch and a half overlay with a crown on it. But depending on how they, you know, suppose they tipped it left, now they got to re-crown it. You know, so again, it's trying to clarify. I would prefer a cross-section on this too, showing big bold letters that it has that crown on it versus being tipped either way.
There is a cross section that does show the crown, but I'd have to
bold it. That's usually in the pickup truck of the builder, not in the pickup truck of the paper.
Right.
And those are my, yeah, you know, I'm comfortable with Rich and John regards to the drainage and the review of the drainage and keeping that water on site and not adding it to the state right away.
And can I add one more thing that that should this move forward in a positive way, and that any condition include something that refers to the proposed drainage patterns for this plan and assure that it gets in the approval for the subdivision so that we don't receive problems from the existing home saying that guy's causing the problems up there, even though they were part of the same subdivision at one point. I just want to make sure that it carries through the decision that the drainage patterns as shown on here are going to be, you know, approved as part of that. You know, what's shown, the drainage patterns are approved as part of the subdivision so that we don't have any problems with homes that are downslope. Because that's where we'll see an issue.
I'm following. I just want to know the form that you'd like that to take. Should that be a note on the plan? Should it
no,
be a...
what I'm saying is that I want the, I'm suggesting that the approval that's written up with the conditions of approval, it includes, you know, that the drainage patterns shown on the proposed plan, you know, are attached to the approval and they're
yeah, we'll add that as a condition, and then typically would require those conditions to be shown on the record plan when it gets recorded.
Okay,
so,
that's fine.
So, I mean, in most instances, in this type of development, that driveway would be a proposed kind of grading plan and a proposed driveway location. To Rich's point, this is actually the only location for the driveway, the only way to grade the road.
Right.
So we're really looking at what should be an as-built condition. There's no, we use a professional term, planning term, wiggle room to go left or right. It has to be done as shown and represented that way. Usually it's, you know, there's some flexibility.
So normally if this were a flat site, we may not even require this level of engineering on it. You could get a subdivision. The houses would be situated, the new house would be situated such that it wouldn't cause any increase in flow to an abutter. But in this case, you're actually showing a potential increase in flow to the abutter. Mm-hmm. you know, you've got a, I mean, you're going to have drywells up there, you're showing drywells, but there's still sort of a drainage pattern going down. So we're just trying to treat this as though it's a subdivision rather than,
yeah,
you know, because later on, you'll come in, later on, this property will come in for a soil erosion control permit through us. And, you know, we'll be able to account for some of these patterns that you're showing because you've got included this detachment.
Yeah. And I think just to explain it a little better in our sensitivity to it, we've had a few projects come in 8-10 years after their approval, 15 years after their approval, not the original developer, not the original owner, and they start building a house that was approved 10 years ago, building a lot that was approved 10 years ago, not really sticking to the concerns that we had. And then it gets built, and then we go out and say, what happened here? Oh, it's been 10 years, nobody remembered. So I think that's what we're trying to just be proactive and, yeah, and make sure that we kind of protect ourselves going into the future, that we limit our headaches later. And
could you clarify for me when you say that there will be an erosion control permit? So there's a permitting process for when they do go construct the driveway that, what's the time frame for that? Like how long would that
take? Oh, it's a very quick process. Okay. It's attached to the building permit. So when you apply for the building permit, you'll be asked to also apply for a soil erosion control fund permit. It's done online. It's part of the same process, and we will look at the approved subdivision plan, the approved plan, and we'll match that with whatever you're showing us. Most likely it'll be this, because like Jamie's saying, you don't have any options. Mm-hmm. So it's effectively this plan with the narrative with that. This is what's going to get submitted.
Oh.
You know, by elevate in your first big fill area, you may want to even show rates to drain by your 104 contour and your boulder retaining wall. Just do a couple arrows that say rights to drain. So that you own both lots right now. So
yeah.
you can do that now, so it's clear that when this is sold to someone, mm-hmm, and someone's complaining that there's a little bit of water that comes onto my property, you look at the map and you gave those rights away.
Yeah.
So that some of that site, you know, in a big rain event in February when the ground's frozen, you may get some water that's headed north onto that property. And the plan, in essence, would to give rights to drain on that property.
Okay.
Jamie?
Yes?
The gradient for a fire department access road shall not exceed the design limitations of the fire apparatus, and I don't have the definition for this.
Okay.
So if that presents an issue, are there alternative options that can be taken to achieve compliance with fire code?
You did have to go to the fire board and get a variance.
Okay.
You don't have, what is it that you're missing?
The designs of the fire truck, I have to go back and look at it.
Oh, okay.
It didn't give a maximum slope, though, did it?
It did not. It does give us an approach and departure, 1 foot drop in 20 feet.
Okay.
So if I could interject, projects that I've done in the past, we've worked with the safety officials to install a cistern on site if water is an issue. You mentioned getting a small truck up. Forgive me, my knowledge of fire is limited, but is that the kind of thing that might satisfy concerns?
Possibly. We go to a small brush truck, but if it's a house fire, it's going to be a lot of water for
it. Just an idea that's worked in the past, mm-hmm, with issues concerning access and water availability. Is that an idea that I might be able to flesh out with you before we finalize things?
Yeah, we can talk about it. Okay.
So just so I have a nice moment. Paul?
No.
Jamie Gorman?
No.
I'll just note that being on Ministerial Road, if there's a garage that is located at the rear of the dwelling, I don't know if you've already got construction drawings for the home, potential home, or if that's...
I don't think that would be an issue with that spot, yeah.
Yeah, so if there's a garage that the doors would be located facing away from Ministerial.
David?
No, I'm all set. It is a tough site, and I'm just curious to see how the drainage works out, even with the crown, with the existing dwellings that are there. But that's my only concern.
And then John?
I'm good.
Okay. So I see... Jay?
Yeah, I just want to clarify Jamie's point, because this seemed to stick with me. In regards to the garages, the way the regs read, it says any proposed garage is visible from Ministerial Road due to lack of vegetation, topography, or other site characteristics shall have doors facing away from the scenic highway. So given the proximity of this, the vegetation, it's probably
if you can't see it, it's not an issue.
Yeah, and that's a poke. That's a poke back there.
You can't see more than a couple hundred feet into the site, so I don't think it's an issue.
I wouldn't make that a condition, but as long as we can determine that it's not being clear-cut, it could be...
Oh, God, no.
So, with the discussion, I see three items that we'll call them outstanding but could be addressed. One is receiving or resolving whether a residential sprinkler system or cistern would need to be installed for the creation of the additional residential unit. Two would be adding rights to drain between the new proposed lot and the existing lot that's under the same ownership or within your control. And three is just a note on the plans with regards to the regulations and locations of the garage, that if any garage was proposed to be built on the site and was visible from Ministerial Road, I would just clip that language and put that right on the lot development plan in a square rectangle box with that statement.
I think maybe the best way to do it is just make it a condition of the approval, and then we just...
And we can add it, too. We lift those all three things, and then we can let them in.
Yeah.
So I didn't, hearing what everyone stated, I don't hear any additional items, unless you feel I missed anything. With that being said, I would entertain a motion to make a favorable recommendation for approval with those three items.
So moved.
Thank you, John. We have a motion to make a favorable recommendation from John Schock, seconded by Jamie Foreman. So, hear any discussion? Hear no discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? And abstentions? Motion carries. Our next agenda item is E, adjournment.
Motion adjourned.
Second.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's what triggers it to be a major subdivision.
Yeah. Any subdivision requested automatically.
It's obviously got it.